comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control, and priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Through drought and famine, natural disasters, my baby has been around for me. Kingdoms are falling, angels be calling, none of that could ever.
Them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drug disposal. Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section, when Dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL. Opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful, pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home.
pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets, anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Chop, chop, chop. stupid. Christianity is 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 stupid. Communism is good. Christianity is stupid. Christianity is stupid. Communism is good.
Shop as usual and avoid panic buying.
Nowadays, here you can find the Mediterranean Conference Center, and you can also see the movie of the Baltic experience, which relates the history of Volta. Che Rai 1, Rai 2?
Rai 1, Rai 2? No, è francese, sarà posto.
Allora.
Dai,
collo. Ma che mi sento così di fare la foto nel
Arrivi anche in casa. Arrivi anche in casa.
Where are these? Are these made in Malta?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. So this is a map.
Before they are green.
Oh,
really? I like the green one, not the yellow one now.
Stop, shop, shop.
This is Brad Keselowski, driver number 2, Discount Tire Ford Mustang. Racing fans know that a quick pit stop to check the tires can give me the winning edge. The same is true for your car. Proper tire tread helps keep traction on the road and everyday driving. To check your tread, simply insert a penny, Lincoln's head first, into your tire grooves. If you can see all of Honest Abe's head, it's time to get your tires checked by a professional.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Alejandra gives me a light peck on the cheek goodbye. Smack. The door closes with a light double click, but the entire wall gives a bassy rumble. I slide my slippers over our hard floor tiles towards the balcony door. There are some wooden Christmas ornaments and an old bell hanging on the door handle. When I open the door, they all knock together, Woody hits first, followed by a sweet mid-range major key resonance. The door is old and creaks terribly as I open it, at least three or four distinct rusty spots, and then a bouncy stop. The flowers in their pots next to the black iron balcony rails do not make a sound, but the street below does. A Vespa rips through the narrow old street, almost hitting a little gypsy boy who calls, "Gilipollas!" I sit down and watch Alejandra hurry around the corner towards the cathedral. It was lightly sprinkling from low gray clouds, but now it begins to pour and she's going to get wet. My knees crack as I stand up to go back inside to grab a jacket and a glass of wine. The jacket makes only a light swish as I put it on, but the cork makes a satisfying pop as I ease it out of the half-full green bottle with no label. It has no label, because we bought it cheap at the wine cellar one floor down and one building over. The advantage of living in Logroño, the Spanish wine capital, is that a bodega is never more than a block away. 1 euro well spent and a bottle of vino joven is gurgling sweetly into my glass. A big old dog barks at nothing from a balcony just up the street. Some pilgrims walk by, as groups of them do every day. One of them is limping, scraping her shoe over the paving stones. They have thick green rain capes, clacking walking sticks, massive backpacks, and they are speaking French. Oh, wait, maybe Flemish. A delivery truck pulls up snorting, honks long and hard. It is an open-back truck with at least 50 fat orange bottles of butane cooking gas knocking into one another. The driver signals the neighborhood with a long honk and then carries a bottle upstairs to each customer who shouts down to him. We don't need a new one yet, so I don't call down.
10, take one, filing horse's hoof.
That'll do it, thank you.
Apologize. Chop, 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 chop.
Thank you.
Look at the various gatherings, the big gathering they had at Carnegie Hall for the 75th birthday of Paul Robeson, and you'll find the Harry Belafontes, all of the towering artists who knew that they owed a tremendous debt to Paul Robeson. It's very interesting at that gathering. I think one of those powerful words were said by Coretta Scott King at that gathering. She was still mourning the death of Martin, and she said, "America did to Paul Robeson what I think they ended up doing to Martin. They buried him alive." See, Coretta's hitting on something deep. Inexcusable treatment of a person who had the courage to tell America about itself in regard to its injustices. They bury him alive.
That's Cornel West, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Cornel West on the legacy of Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson is one of the 20th century's most enduring and multi-talented figures. He broke through the color line and excelled in sports, film, music, and theater. He became world famous, yet in the United States, he was to be persecuted and hounded for his political beliefs. In his recordings, particularly of spirituals and folk songs, Robeson's mellifluous bass baritone voice awakened African Americans to their heritage and gained him a broad audience. He won acclaim on Broadway, especially in the musical Showboat, in which he sang the classic Old Man River. His dramatic performance in Othello is legendary. By the 1930s, he was singing in major concert halls all over the United States and Europe. By the early 1940s, one biographer states that Robeson was the most famous black man in America. Theodore Dreiser, the well-known writer of the day, hailed Robeson as an artistic and social genius. Never content to be just an entertainer, Robeson had strong political views, and he wasn't afraid to express them. He condemned racism and segregation in the United States. He was an anti-imperialist who advocated the liberation of Africa and Asia from their European colonial masters. He was an early and vociferous opponent of fascism. He visited Spain and sang for the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, who were fighting Franco. He admired the Soviet Union and said so openly. After World War II, the U.S. was saturated in the ideology of anti-communism. The Soviet Union, erstwhile ally, was now the arch enemy. Robeson's support for the USSR did not waver, and for it, he paid a heavy personal and professional price. He was a target of Hoover's FBI. He was verbally and physically assaulted and attacked. One notorious incident occurred in 1949 in Peekskill, New York. Robeson would later recall the baying of the lynch mob, the cries for my life from the hate-twisted mouths. In 1950, the State Department revoked his passport, declaring that Paul Robeson's travel abroad would be contrary to the best interests of the United States. Here is Robeson in his own words.
"And why do they take my passport away? They have said so in a case. They put it in a brief. They said that no matter what my political beliefs, what my standing among the Negro people of my own land in America, but they would have to take my passport away anyhow, because out of my own lips, mind you, from my own lips, for many years, I have been struggling for the independence of the colonial peoples of Africa, and that is meddling in the foreign affairs of the United States government." Now, that's just too bad because I'm going to have to continue to miss.
Having his passport taken away was a tremendous blow to Robeson's career. He was not only unable to perform overseas, but he was blacklisted domestically. His income plummeted. The return of his passport in 1958 came too late. His final years were marked by depression and illness. He died in 1976 in relative obscurity. In recent years, because of important biographies by Martin Duberman and Lloyd Brown, as well as the work and efforts of others, there's a revival of interest in Paul Robeson. One can hardly imagine a better person to talk about Robeson's legacy than Cornel West. He's been called the preeminent African-American intellectual of his generation. He's the Dietrich Bonhoeffer Professor of Philosophy at Union Theological Seminary. With his preacher-like cadences and passionate delivery, he's much in demand as a speaker. A prolific author, his book Race Matters was a bestseller. He ran for president as an independent in 2024. Cornel West gave the first annual Paul Robeson Lecture at Columbia University Law School. This classic from the AR archives, marking Black History Month, was recorded in February 1999. And now, Cornel West.
I must say, I tremble as I rise and lift my voice to put forward reflections on Paul Leroy Robeson. There's levels suffering, sacrifice, sadness, loneliness, courage that constitutes such a formidable challenge for us to dwell into the complexity of his life. I congratulate Columbia Law School for having the audacity to begin a lecture series in the name of the great Paul Leroy Robeson. Now, I know he's class 1923. He wasn't too crazy about the place, we should say. He had very, very pleasant memories of the dean at that time, Harlan Fisk Stone. He had classmates like Thomas Dewey and William O. Douglas. But he zipped through. He didn't practice law for too long, just a few months after being hired by a firm, Stonesbury and Minor firm. And after working on the will of Jay Gould, he was just a stenographer who said, "I'll never take dictation from a nigger." And he decided maybe he ought to do something else with his life. Never took the bar. But in the best of the Columbia Law School tradition, his mind was sharpened. But as is true in most law schools, one wonders whether the mind is not only sharpened, but also